Can President Trump make Alcatraz great again? Well, that's the plan. But before we decide whether that's a feasible or just policy goal, what is Alcatraz? Today, it's just a tourist attraction nestled near the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. But Alcatraz's history spans 175 years. President Millard Fillmore declared the island a military reservation in 1850. By the end of that decade, troops were permanently garrisoned at the posts on Alcatraz for the defense of the Bay Area. In 1934, Alcatraz transitioned into a federal penitentiary and remained as one for 29 years. The prison housed more than 1,500 inmates during that time. The Alcatraz prison was ginned up by Attorney General Homer Cummings and Director of the Bureau of Prisons, Sanford Bates. It was the Justice Department's solution to public safety fears and organized crime. The purpose was to create a one-of-a-kind prison. It was classified as a concentration model, which is where people considered too difficult to incarcerate in any other prison would all be housed together. This model had never been put into practice before, and thus Alcatraz served as an experiment. Eventually, this model would be duplicated and serve as a blueprint for the high-security federal prison located in Marion, Illinois. When it came to location, the goal was simple. The U.S. needed a remote site that prohibited constant communication with the outside world. Alcatraz Island happened to be available at the time the government was searching for a location. The Bureau of Prisons circumvented San Francisco citizens who were apprehensive about having criminals that close to the city. James A. Johnston, a former prison administrator from the California Department of Corrections, was selected as its warden. With a location and a warden in place, Alcatraz was well on its way to living up to its infamous legacy. While in operation for nearly three decades, 36 men tried to escape on 14 separate occasions. All of them either died or were caught, except three men, whose whereabouts to this day are unknown. If escapes and inmate deaths aren't enough of a reason, how about this one? It's inefficient. You think pennies costing more to make than they're worth is wasteful? Think that the U.S. aid office is wasteful? Well, DOGE would have a field day with Alcatraz if it wasn't a MAGA issue. According to the U.S. Bureau of Prisons, quote, the island had no source of fresh water, so nearly 1 million gallons of water had to be barged to the island each week. Every supply run had to be ferried across cold, choppy waters, from food to fuel to basic maintenance equipment. By 1959, it cost the federal government more than $10 a day to house a prisoner at Alcatraz. That was compared to just $3 per day at a federal prison in Atlanta. Yes, it cost more than three times the cost of a regular prison. This caused Congress to eventually deem it more efficient to build a brand new facility than keep the island running. And while Alcatraz was one of the worst, things aren't going much better these days at the Bureau of Prisons. The Bureau is the Justice Department's largest agency, with more than 30,000 employees, 155,000 inmates, and an annual budget of $8 billion. Today, the Bureau of Prisons currently has 16 penitentiaries fulfilling the same high-security functions as Alcatraz, including its maximum security facility in Florence, Colorado, and the U.S. Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana, which is home to the Federal Death Chamber. However, the Bureau of Prisons is rife with inefficiency. There's been 11 inmates in just 2 months. There's been more than 4,000 staff vacancies, and there's a $3 billion repair backlog. This has all had disastrous consequences. It's produced long overtime shifts for some workers and continued the use of a policy known as augmentation, where prison nurses, cooks, teachers, and other workers are pressed into duty to guard inmates. Infrastructure is decaying as well. At a congressional hearing in February, a Bureau of Prisons official told Congress that more than 4,000 beds within the system are unusable because of dangerous conditions like leaking or failing roofs, mold, asbestos, or lead. And keep in mind, 4,000 beds is equivalent to that of at least two full-size prisons. Our prison system is big and crumbling. And we're not going to run out of prisoners anytime soon the way we lock up people in this country. The U.S. has just 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prison population. The U.S. has the highest incarceration rate of any independent democracy on Earth. Even worse, every single state in America incarcerates more people per capita than most other nations around the globe. Even progressive U.S. states like New York and Massachusetts appear as extreme as Louisiana and Mississippi in their use of prisons and jails. The U.S. holds 30% of the world's incarcerated women. The U.S. incarceration rate is also more than three times that of other founding NATO countries. America, land of the free. That sounds more like an oxymoron right about now, doesn't it? And while it may feel good to politicians to brag about being tough on crime, it's not the best solution. Believe it or not, throwing people in cages like animals doesn't reform them into responsible citizens. There are better solutions out there. The RAND Corporation estimates that every dollar invested in prison-based education saves taxpayers $5 in reduced incarceration costs. Incarcerated people who participate in post-secondary education programs, for example, have 48% lower odds of returning to prison than those who do not. And check this out. The Restoring Promise Initiative operates within prison facilities to create housing units for young adults. The program is centered on giving inmates dignity in hopes that it will change correctional culture. Old prison cells are converted into spaces for learning, meditation, and conflict resolution. Staff is retrained and instructed to focus on restorative processes that help people repair harm and realize their potential through education, mentorship, accountability, and family engagement. The attempt to make life in prison as much like life on the outside as possible has been successful. In one South Carolina prison, people in these units were nearly 75% less likely to be convicted of a violent infraction compared with those who served time elsewhere in another facility. It's almost like treating people like people is effective. A lot of times we put people in prison because we don't like them or their lifestyle, not because they harm us or affect our lives. We put people in prison because we hold bigoted views of other people's bad actions that deserve jail time and then other actions which we think do not. Divorce creates all sorts of lifelong emotional and psychological trauma for children. Absentee fathers who leave single mothers to put the pieces back together create kids who are more likely to be incarcerated. But we aren't locking up divorced couples, single mothers, or absentee fathers because it's not against the law to do that. Being married but ignoring your kids and failing to show up for them also causes psychological damage. However, the creators of these damaged kids that become criminals skate through with nothing on their record and no jail time. Because we don't outlaw bad parenting. No one wants to take responsibility for their actions, nor could anyone agree on what bad parenting is. You could probably say the same thing about how people might get arrested and then sent to high security prisons. They just happen to get caught, and maybe they're paying the price for their bad parents. But otherizing them and casting them aside, seeing them as unworthy of a second chance, and treating them inhumanely doesn't make us tough on crime. It makes us weak on mercy. How many people have failed to be completely truthful on their taxes, stole something from work, or went over the speed limit? Tax evasion, theft, and harming others with reckless driving are all bad and illegal. It's just that we can't catch everyone. Condemning prisoners you don't know that were convicted via a corrupt justice system and incarcerated by a bureau of prisons that is falling apart doesn't make you moral. It makes you incapable of nuance, of understanding that criminals get a bad shake and unfair treatment just like the rest of us do at times. We end up making them more criminal and less rehabilitated with our crappy solutions. And what about the innocent ones that get incarcerated? That's the thing about the criminal justice system. We let the government determine it. If your freedom and liberty depended on the courts, you might not be so comfortable with the phrase, good enough for government work. A conviction shouldn't mean condemnation. No one really knows all the aspects of a crime that someone was sent to prison for. Our founding fathers believed it should be hard to convict someone of a crime and spent a great deal of time in the Constitution outlining what the government could and couldn't do to jail you. In fact, founding father Benjamin Franklin once said, quote, "It is better 100 guilty persons should escape than one innocent person should suffer." How many people will suffer in a redo of Alcatraz? Think more than one? Think just one of the men in Alcatraz might have been innocent? Then maybe we shouldn't look for ways to cheer on the persistent opening of a gulag in the name of law and order. We should be rereading the Constitution and reminding ourselves that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness should be the goal of government, not to have them inventing cruel ways to lock us up on an island. Now that you know where we've been, find out where we're going. Tune in to Ladies Love Politics, where you can stay informed without going insane.